At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I'm John Batchelor with Mark Clifford, the author of Today Hong Kong, Tomorrow the World, a very detailed telling of why Hong Kong struggled all these decades to be unique, to be a success, a postmodern city, it called itself, with culture, with depth, with education, lots of education. Mark makes the point it's really nerdy and it's really geeky. They study everything, including how to throw a Molotov cocktail. We come to 2019. Five demands. What are they, Mark? I have extradition. They want the extradition bill stopped. You can't kidnap us. They want police brutality punished. They want amnesty for those who've been arrested. But chiefly, they want full universal suffrage. Did they know that was provocative? Did they know that the fire would come?
They knew it was provocative. I don't think anyone imagined how quickly and how severely the Chinese would crack down on the demands. But by 2019, things had reached a boiling point, and it had been 22 years since Hong Kong had been given back to the mainland. That's 22 years out of 50 years that Hong Kong was promised this high degree of autonomy, promised more freedom than ever, promised Hong Kong people ruling Hong Kong, promised that they'd be able to vote for their mayor and their city council, and nothing was happening. Beijing just kept moving the goalposts back, and people were fed up with it. And this new generation of activists, people like Joshua Wong, born in 1996, a whole slew of young people born in the 90s, mid to late 90s, they had no memory of Chris Patten and the evil British oppressors, as the Chinese like to say. But they wanted the freedom that went with a kind of international, global, postmodern, well-educated, affluent city that Hong Kong was. I mean, they weren't asking for the world. They were just asking what was promised to them. And they went out, and then the flashpoint came when the then mayor, chief executive Carrie Lam, proposed a bill that would have allowed people arrested in Hong Kong to be sent back to the mainland for trial. This was just unthinkable, outrageous, because Hong Kong still did have its own legal system. And I think everybody, including a lot of the business community, very quietly worried, hey, what if I get in a business dispute with my partner in Wuhan or Shanghai or Beijing, and they use their political connections to go to a judge and get an arrest warrant for me in Hong Kong? I mean, maybe I've never done anything wrong, but I'm not going to get justice in the mainland. I'm effectively being kidnapped. I could be looking at torture, life imprisonment, death in prison. And the whole city just rose up. And there were large protests against the bill, and it was stopped. But in the course of that, the police brutality really ratcheted up. And so these five demands came as a result of the police brutality. They wanted, as you say, they wanted universal suffrage. They wanted an end to that bill. They also wanted a designation. They were called rioters, which has quite severe legal penalties. They wanted that dropped. They wanted a real investigation into the police. Unfortunately, they didn't get any of that. But over the period of the next roughly 6 months, the level of violence unfortunately increased, but public support stayed very, very strong for the pro-democracy movement. At the end of this tumultuous period, there was an election for district council offices, very low level, the lowest in Hong Kong, ward level office. And the turnout was extraordinary, well over 70%, highest in Hong Kong history, very high by global standards. And the pro-democracy people ran home with a landslide. And I think at that point, Beijing said, wow, we have lost this city, but we're not going to accept it. We're not going to accept the results at the ballot box. We're just going to throw people in jail.
The national security law follows. No reason to follow that. Everybody knows what villainy is. Mark has lessons for all of us as to how China, Beijing did this, how the CCP did this. Go ahead, Mark.
No, I think one important thing is that unlike in Beijing, they didn't kill in 1989, they didn't kill hundreds of people, but they used a legal system. They used media, law, administration, and willing enablers, quislings, local officials, business people, and others who were too afraid to oppose them. And so it shows, you know, the fragility of institutions, even in a place like Hong Kong. But I think we can go on and talk about what the lessons are.
The economic weapons, forcing people to choose sides. You can't remain in between. And using technology, the surveillance technology. What strikes me, Mark, is as I was making that list, writing it down, I thought Pakistan, I thought Argentina, I thought Sri Lanka. Same tools, and using them on the elite who are then isolated and compromised and can't get out. And it works, Mark. It worked. Did Hong Kong see it happening at the time, that the investments, the tourism, and the surveillance technology was going to be used against it?
Oh, I think many people were worried and but there wasn't really a lot that they could do until it was too late. And then when the national security law came in the middle of 2020, there was about a five week notice period. But even the elite were completely caught off guard. This was done in Beijing. It was completely against every promise that Beijing had made. No consultation with Hong Kong. Even the chief executive didn't see the law until the morning that it was the day it was promulgated. But I think there are larger lessons for the rest of the world, even places that are not, you know, under the thumb of China in the way that Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and of course Hong Kong are. And that's that China is increasingly trying to define what media and politicians around the world can do. So as part of my current job, I run a group called Committee for Freedom in Hong Kong.
We have 1 minute. Go ahead.
And what we're finding as we meet politicians from around the world is they're being threatened by Chinese diplomats, Chinese media people, netizens. You can't do that. You can't go to Taiwan. You can't say this about Tibet. You can't support the Uyghurs. You can't support Hong Kong. China wants to take these bully tactics worldwide. And I think we have to be alert. We have to stand up and we have to call them out, whether they're physically harassing people, as they've done to many, many Hong Kongers in the diaspora, or whether they're threatening, elected politicians, media people, and others. I think eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
The book is Today Hong Kong, Tomorrow the World, What China's Crackdown Reveals About Its Plans to End Freedom Everywhere. Mark Clifford is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.